Good evening and welcome to Slam the Gavel, the show that tells it all regarding family court, other court issues, as well as CPS. I am your host, Marianne Petrie. This episode of Slam the Gavel is sponsored by CPS Protect Consulting Services. Child Protective Services cases are among the most frightening experiences any parent can endure. Don't face them alone. With urgent assist by CPS Protect, you get the peace of mind to raise your children as you see fit. And the personalized assistance of their team of expert child welfare consultants, former CPS investigators themselves, right when you need it. Get started absolutely free at cpsprotect.com/register, and this is available in all 50 states. Also, one next announcement, go to the site, pleasedoyourjob.com. We need 2,000 more signatures to get a case reopened. That's pleasedoyourjob.com. I've got a brand new guest on. I have Sean Keenan on. He is a husband and father of two teenage children in Connecticut. His divorce case has been going on since he filed for divorce in 2010 and is still a very active and contested case. Now, the lowlights of this case include false sexual abuse allegations made by the mother after the divorce petition was filed, other false criminal charges made by the mother. The mother recanted her allegations at trial as they were contradictory and unsubstantiated by multiple DCF investigations. However, there was no accountability to hold her to for making these false accusations. Also, he's strapped with a lifetime alimony award after only 3.5-year marriage based on her unsubstantiated claim that she had terminal cancer. Now, he spent 12 years trying to protect the kids from their unfit, abusive mother. Finally, a DCF report substantiating that the children had been seriously abused by their mother came to light. Family court, however, still 100% on the side of the mother, debilitating he and his children with punitive alimony, threatening mandated reunification and excluding evidence, of course, of the mother's abuse. And I welcome you, Sean Keenan. I'm so sorry you're going through this, and this alimony has got to go.
Thanks, Marianne. I mean, the alimony is the main remaining issue for us, because it's one of them. I mean, the children reside here with us now, and so they're physically safe. That's a relatively recent development. And last summer, we wanted to take them to a family wedding out of the country, and they still didn't have passports because the mother had refused to sign the form and had acknowledged it was just out of spite. So we were back in court as recently as last summer. And in fact, there was a court order for her to provide the passport forms, and she was in contempt of the court order. There was no repercussions at all.
Oh, no.
So it really is ongoing. But they are here and they're safe. And as you mentioned in the introduction, the DCF substantiated that both children had suffered multiple types of abuse, and my son, very serious sexual abuse at the hands of their mother. Mm-hmm. And while the court refused to allow that information in, it was enough to get their mother to agree to a stipulation to have the children reside with us. So the court never backed us up in protecting the children. They still didn't give us full custody. And it was only through a series of stipulations that we would get some, you know, additional protection for the kids when the ex was backed into a corner. For example, several times we had the court order drug testing. Mm-hmm. No drug testing was ever done because her and her attorney would come back and say, well, we're willing to let you have a little bit more parenting time with the children, or we're willing to let you have some decision-making in this area. And, you know, I would always take that. So I would sign the stipulation, and then the drug testing would be off the table. So it was 13 years of, you know, just grinding away to get a little bit more decision-making, a little bit more time with the children, and finally get them out of her house and into our house.
How did you make it through that? You know, any advice you can give any parent going through this grueling process of extortion and collusion, what would you offer someone?
Well, I think what you're doing is tremendous service because the way this family court charade works is that most people who are exposed to it have no experience. They have no idea what to expect. And the whole system is geared up to shake down people with income. And you wouldn't expect that. I mean, court, you think it's about justice. You think it's about fairness. You think, you know, I'm an American, I pay my taxes. But that's not what family court is. So I think that the being able to understand there's a community of people that are working to change the way things are and can help each other with specific, you know, specific things that they're trying to do in support of their case and their children, like how to write letters, who to write them to, how to file a judicial complaint against a judge, what's likely to happen. The role of the GAL. So the role of the GAL in Connecticut, the GAL didn't like me from day one. And she told me she was backing the mother from day one. And she said her allegation against me were credible when they weren't. And she filed false evidence against me. She made herself attorney for the minor children over my objection. She actually wrote the judge's orders. And if I can jump to the end, after DCF did their investigation 2 years ago and found that the children had been abused and in one case sexually molested, there was a police investigation. It was a criminal issue.
Right.
The investigator for our local department who was handling the case, our local police department, called the GAL in my case because she was known as somebody who's involved in many, many sexual abuse allegations cases, way more than the average. Like anytime a case would get in the hands of this GAL, miraculously, it turned out to be child molestation. I mean, and if you met her, you would see there's something wrong with her. Okay. She's it's sexual molestation is her thing. So the investigator called her for advice. And what do you think happened? The investigation was dropped. Felony child molestation charges never brought. No repercussions. So I'm sorry, that's a bit of a digression, but I think the fact that GALs can do anything they want to you and that there's complete immunity and you have no protection against them, almost no protection against them, is something that people need to know early on. One needs to put up some protection against possible abuse by a GAL. If you have the wrong GAL, you are in big, big trouble.
Oh, I agree with that. In fact, when I was going through this, that we were going to probably head towards a GAL. So what I did was I went to every attorney in town that did that. And I, you know, just got consultations. Therefore, it would be a conflict of interest. So we never ended up with a GAL. That's one game to play.
Yeah, well, the GAL in my case was the head GA, one of the head GALs. She trains other GALs and she teaches courses in spotting child molestation. She's plugged in with the judges and can do anything she wants. So at one point, we finally got a bill passed in Connecticut that allows parents to choose the GAL. They can avoid a GAL that they don't want. That right didn't exist for me. I filed a motion to have my GAL removed because she was clearly not, you know, it was one-sided and it had nothing to do with the children. She's a sadist, you know, and she hates white men. And she told me she was going to destroy me. So I filed a motion. She told me that in open court. I filed a motion to have her removed. It was a very strong motion, but guess what? Motion was denied. So after I filed that, she moved the case to another court where, you know, I was like a prisoner. I mean, I've been treated like a felon criminal. I've never done anything wrong, but I, you know, it's ridiculous. So I went to testify in front of the Senate Finance Committee and Judiciary Committee in 2014 when that bill was being considered, lobbying in support of it. Before me, the GALs testified. And the last GAL to testify was the GAL in my case. And she said, oh, we add so much value. We're the only ones who know how to manage these high conflict cases. And these claims about us charging exorbitant fees are just phony. I mean, we rarely defeat, even when it's several years and it's a very complicated case, it rarely ends up being more than, say, $15,000 for the GAL fees. So I followed her and I said, well, before I tell you about my case, I just need to tell you that Sharon Dornfeld, the GAL who just testified, charged me $80,000. $80,000, not 15. And I also had to pay the custody evaluator, who was Sharon Dornfeld's personal close friend, Joan Oppenheim, $80,000. And the custody evaluation was completely bogus. It was against me. It was cooked up from the beginning. And the whole point was to make me the bad guy. And you don't know that these things can happen to you. I mean, but it is a very corrupt system. Mm-hmm. The GALs, the appointed psychologists, the appointed custody evaluators, the appointed counselors, marriage counselors, they're yeah. saying you have to go to counseling. She said she was claiming that I sexually molested both of my children. I'm like, what are we going to accomplish in counseling? They're like, well, you have to go. The GAL says it, or you know, you can go to jail, and it's $450 an hour for the counseling because it's her friend, and
oh yeah,
on and on and on and on.
See, people need to know this. I'm glad you pointed that out. A lot of people think it's going to be fair and it's going to be, you know, run correctly, and it's not. It's everybody knows somebody, and everybody's got their hands in everybody's pockets. Just so everybody knows that.
Yes. So I'd also like to tell you that I've seen a lot of horror stories. Mm-hmm. And in many of them, there are complaints about DCF or whatever the equivalent is in the other state, mm-hmm. About them also being arbitrary and removing children without cause and just creating a lot of mischief in these cases. I'm very sympathetic, but I have to tell you, in my case, it was the opposite. The DCF teams that were involved with my family, and there have been many, many episodes of DCF involvement, were all very good, and they all understood what was going on. The problem was they're excluded, completely excluded from court. The judge in my case said DCF workers will not testify. DCF reports will not come into court. No DCF information is allowed in my court.
That's the first time I've ever heard that.
Well, it's a constitutional rights violation. It's also a violation of Connecticut's state statute on evidentiary requirements. There's no statute or substatute which allows the judge to exclude relevant testimony or evidence, particularly when it's from the state agency, which we support as taxpayers, and they have evidence. So that is the basis of my judicial complaint, which I filed last month. Against Judge Winslow. Now, there are 100 things that are brutally unfair and unjust about Judge Winslow's behavior, but you need something very hard and crisp and legal to file a complaint and hope to have any effect. A recent study in Connecticut found that 88%, maybe it was 98% of judicial complaints are dismissed with no comment, which means you don't hear anything from anyone. You don't even find out that it's been dismissed.
That's so wrong. Yeah. And it's the same percentage here where I'm at as well.
So the good news is I have learned a lot from people like you and the people that are on your podcasts, and that has provided moral support, which I think is really important. People who are involved in this kind of stuff really do need moral support. You aren't alone, and you can get advice and guidance from other people. And that little bit of additional advice and guidance and moral support can mean the difference, I think. Mm-hmm. So I did a letter writing campaign. So many legislators, the top lawyers at DCF, we have a children's committee in the legislature here in Connecticut So they all have gotten packages that show what's happened in my case and what the basis of the complaint is. And I believe I can end this crazy nightmare if I could just have a day in court with a fair judge. Even though it's taken 13 years, 14 years now, I'd still like it to be over.
Oh, definitely. And what's the guarantee that you will get a fair judge? That's the scary part.
Well, my understanding is that once the judicial complaint is in process, if I file the motion in that window, that judge cannot hear my case. So I have to take advantage of the window. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my case is quite simple. The trial judge ultimately said that I was angry, and that was why I can't have any rights to make decisions for the children and have minimal child time. I'm angry about the false sexual abuse allegations, whereas the mother recanted. So she's gotten over it, and therefore she's the better parent. But what my case will be based on is he said that I claim that the mother is mentally ill and is an unfit parent, and therefore I'm going to need a lot of psychotherapy to overcome these false beliefs. It says that in the ruling. So I can say, well, by the DCF's report, the children were molested by her and abused over the course of years. And I had plenty of other evidence to show that she is mentally ill. So if the ruling against me was based on the fact that I believed she was mentally ill and was an unfit parent, well, the evidence is in. She is mentally ill, and the children were removed from her home. My daughter was hospitalized because of the abuse. So, I mean, I don't know how a judge can look at that and say it was wrong. It needs to be overturned. But I, of course, I have to moderate my expectations because there's no guarantee of justice in a family court.
No.
It just isn't.
That's why I would like to see family court just be completely abolished, because they do make up the law as they go along.
They make it up as they go along. And so I know that it varies by state. Maybe there's some good practices. Maybe there's a way to find a middle ground where good practices in certain states can be adopted and bad states, practices that are in bad states can be rejected. But it's my view on reflection here that money breeds corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And Connecticut is a state, it's a very wealthy state, but it's a state with only a few cities, and the cities are very poor.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the money in Connecticut? It's in the suburbs, very wealthy suburbs. And that's why in Connecticut, the family court is the epicenter of corruption, because that's the only game in town, right? It's just, there's no other thing going on here. It's a few small cities, is nothing, but then you have these very wealthy suburbs and a lot of divorce activity. And so the corruption is endemic to the family court system in Connecticut. And the lawyers are getting richer and richer and richer every day. And I've spent, I don't want to tell you how much, but I come from a humble background. I grew up middle class in New Jersey. I was able to go to a great graduate program in economics, and that led me into a career that was quite lucrative. And I worked hard and I saved. And that was all wiped out. So family court wiped all that savings. I lost a house with $500,000 of home equity. Just, I had to foreclose on it because in this case, the judge said the house should be sold, but until the ex-wife leaves, the husband has to pay all the bills. So his saying the house should be sold created no mechanism for it to get sold. So she lived in it for 3.5 years. I paid for the whole house, running the heat as high as possible, keeping all the lights on and just burning up expenses at her lawyer's suggestion. And they thought it was funny. That's the whole thing. It's funny. And ultimately I had to default on the mortgage and have the house seized because I couldn't 3.5 years of that.
Oh my gosh. And you were married to her for how long?
3.5 years.
Oh.
And I'm the one who filed for divorce because of her erratic behavior. And she was bringing drugs into the house. My 3-year-old daughter came out of this laundry room carrying a bag of marijuana. Now, the interesting thing is that the trial that I had, it took 2 years for my filing to get to trial. The trial was like the OJ trial. It was 6 days. The total cost of the trial was close to $700,000. And the cause of the me filing for divorce was never mentioned. There was no question or interest or evidence or comment about why I filed for divorce. It wasn't relevant.
And for this judge to not let DCF in, usually they always, what I was told is they listen to CPS and they'll go with whatever CPS says, these judges, because they can't think for themselves. But for the most part, they'll just go along with what CPS says.
Yeah, well, we have the opposite here. In fact, this story has tentacles. Like I could literally tell you, talk for 6 hours and not stop telling you new shocking stories that are associated with this case. But I'll give you one more now. DCF, believing that family court was never going to pr protect the children and that they needed to be taken out of that house, brought their own case in juvenile court. And they told me, look, we need a completely new jurisdiction. So we're going to make this a neglect case, and we're going to bring it in Bridgeport, in a juvenile court, and that'll take this judge out of it. So that was great. They filed. The case was rock solid. Of course, I paid my lawyer to prepare for the case, and there was a lot of preparation, and we had a trial date, and then a month before the trial date, the judge in the family court called the judge in the juvenile court and said, "This is my case. You're not to hear it." And they dropped the charges.
Ooh. Then what does DCF do? Because
They
they were.
said they did nothing. They were like, "There's nothing we can do. This judge hates us. There's nothing we can do about it."
And this is that Judge Winslow.
Yes.
Oh. Oh yeah, that's egregious. I'm so sorry
Yeah.
you've been through this, and now you're strapped with this alimony.
And we don't have custody. So, I mean, the fact is, the mother was, I think, truly frightened by when it was she was caught, about the abuse stuff. So she kind of vanished. But if it were not for that, Judge Winslow would be ordering reunification at my expense. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
always at my expense. And, going back to the brain cancer thing, I asked for medical records at the beginning of the original trial, and the motion was denied. They said it's invasive. Now, she's had anaplastic astrocytoma for 20 years. It's a brain cancer where your average life expectancy is less than 3. So she now has claimed to have had it for 20 years, not on chemo, not on radiation therapy, smokes, drinks, gambles, drives around. And what kind of cancer is that?
Okay. Where is she now? Do you know where she's living
Yeah,
now?
she's bought 3 houses since that house was foreclosed. The first house she bought was an $800,000 house with a pool. It was way more expensive than the house we live in, but she's got lifetime alimony. So she was able to qualify for a mortgage. Then
Oh my
she
God.
sold that and bought another house with a pool. And then when the DCF report came out against her, she sold that house and moved to a what we believe is a condo in near Fairfield. But the fact is, she asked the judge to make it so that we would never know where she lived because she's afraid of me. And the judge
Oh.
agreed. So the judge said, "You're not entitled to know where she lives. You have to make these electronic payments for life, not knowing whether she's alive or dead."
Oh no. Yeah, this judge needs to be off the bench.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's a known drug addict. She admitted it under oath. She brought drugs into the house when the kids were young. She admitted it under oath. It never saw the light of day because whenever they were backed into the corner, they could always offer us a little more parenting time, a little more decision making, which of course, when you're a parent and your children are not safe, you take that, right? You don't gamble with a judge that you know is going to rule against you. So anytime we could get some incremental protection for the children, we took it.
So wrong. Is there any way you can do something with this lifetime alimony? This is just...
Well, my plan is to file a motion to modify as soon as I'm sure that the judicial complaint is in process. But, you know, I talked to my wife about this. I'm ready to go to jail. I mean, I'm not going to pay the woman who molested my children and have them not go to college. They can't afford to go to college. We can't afford to send them to college. And there's a law in the United States, in Connecticut, that the parents must share equally in the college expense up to the cost of UConn, which is a state school. Judge Winslow said she doesn't have to. She doesn't have to. The college is not my problem. Alimony is my problem. Alimony is the priority. The kids' college is your problem.
So let me ask.
It's family court for families.
So then I haven't really looked this up, but with this alimony, is this like Title 4D when you pay child support, the state takes so much money off of the dollar? Does alimony work like that, or is that completely not associated with Title 4 B, D, or E?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't recall what the actual statute is, but there's an equitable sharing of college expenses clause, which says that as long as the resources are available, that there should be a split of college expenses up to the cost of the state university. But Judge Winslow has said in this case that doesn't apply, and she's not required to spend anything on the children.
And Judge Winslow is a male judge.
No, she's a female judge.
Female judge.
Went to Wellesley, hates men. I mean, that's the thing is, this, you've got so much bias in the court. They're just wreaking out these biases, and they think it's funny. I mean, they really do. They laugh at you. They've laughed at me.
Same here.
Yeah, they laugh at you.
Yeah, this is so sad. I'm sorry this has happened to you. And there's got to be a way to stop this alimony. If the judge is going to order alimony, why didn't she just order it for 2 years to help the person get back on their feet?
Because she claimed she couldn't work. And, you know, the evidence was, she said, I'll never forget this. She was asked in direct cross, why can't you work? She said, well, I get a headache if I start working.
Oh, doesn't everybody?
Well, doesn't everybody is one response. My thought was, how would you know? You haven't worked in 9 years.
Oh my God.
And you know, the thing is, she's a very compelling victim. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might ask, why did I marry someone like this? And the answer is, I believed her. I believed she was recovering from cancer. I believed she had had a near-death experience and she had faced it bravely. And, you know, that she was starting her life over after having been through that experience. And I thought that was exciting and I was totally sold. Mm-hmm. And I've seen her go into rooms and play a victim role and say, I'm a narcissist, I'm violent, I do this. And people believe her. There's no fact in it. There's no protection against people like that.
No, there isn't. There really isn't.
Because perjury, she's perjured herself repeatedly. Nope. It's not recognized by family court. It's not a problem.
No, it's
perjury
not.
Is not a problem. Unless the judge doesn't like you, then it is a problem. The judge likes you, there's no complaint you can make about it. They just laugh it off.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you ever represent yourself or?
I am representing myself now. Yeah, that's too long to go into. I've had many, many lawyers. They've all told me a great story. They've charged me a lot of money and they are all cowards because they're in this for the long haul. They don't want to get a judge upset. They don't want to file a complaint. Mm-hmm. And if they have a customer walk away, there's a million other customers with more money. Plus, after you've been their client for a couple of years, you probably don't have that much money left. They have it. So that's, and I think this is an important part, Marianne. That's been my experience. On the other side, she had a lawyer who worked for her the whole time, effectively for free. A woman who knows that when a man has been, is a victim in family court, it's a gift that keeps on giving. And that she could, you know, constantly go back and say, I need lawyer fees, and the judge will grant them. So while I was paying hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to protect my children, my ex was getting this lawyer who told people she hated me, and her whole goal in life was to continue to torment me in court. And she did exactly that. And then she'd ask for lawyer fees and I'd have to pay her. And they lied about, they just lied about everything. It was just, I thought, well, how can this keep going on? But it can.
Just it can. On. It really can. You know, your story is very important. What's happening to you is happening to a lot of guys and even a lot of women that I'm dealing with too, that are being shown disrespect in the courtroom. Really, they should just abolish family court, clean it out, bring it down to civil where people can have a jury. And it would probably be a little bit more fair than what we're dealing with here.
I agree. A jury would solve the problem. I agree. How can we make that happen?
Continue to speak out. You spoke in front of the, was it the state Senate?
Yes.
In 2014,
yes.
I would say keep speaking out. When you spoke, they'll probably only gave you 3 minutes to talk, right?
Yeah, they gave me about 3 minutes.
And were you able to pack the punch?
I thought so. You know, when I was at trial, because there were allegations that I molested my children, and also a lot of videotapes that were made by the GAL, she went in to my house, which I wasn't allowed to go in, and videotaped my three-year-old daughter in bed, claiming that she could find evidence of sexual molestation through these nighttime video raids. That was going to be played in open court. But for that reason and other reasons, the transcript was sealed. The courtroom was sealed and the transcript was sealed. So I had no evidence of what happened in that courtroom. But when I testified, they put my testimony on the internet right away and my daughter found it. So you have to be willing to suffer the lack of privacy to speak out, because that's one of the ways they try to prevent you from speaking, is that the stories are so horrible that people are ashamed and they want to protect their children. And so they won't speak out. But I think we all have to kind of suck it up and go public and say, this is what happened.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. Some people are very ashamed that they've lost their kids based on false allegations. And that was the whole purpose of everything with this podcast and everything else, is to expose the behaviors of these sociopaths that think they can lie on you and then recant and then just goes away without any fines or jail time.
Well, okay. I know we're running up against time. I want to correct something just for the record here. I am aware that women as well as men are equally victimized in the family court system, and they're equally subject to unjust treatment and lose the ability to protect their children or lose their children altogether. I know of those stories. My comment was really about the local situation here where I am, where there seems to be a lot of anti-man bias and a lot of women in positions of power, the GALs and the judges. So I want to correct that. But to your other point, one of the tentacles of this is, after saying under oath that she no longer believed I molested the children, my ex went right back out and started telling people that I molested the children. So I sued her in civil court, and I won.
Wow.
And I won a significant penalty. And the penalty was paid by her homeowner's insurance, which had a liability clause, which I paid for. So no repercussions for her. No penalty for her. What? I paid for the insurance, and then the insurance paid her penalty. And that evidence was never allowed in to family court. because Judge Winslow said it was irrelevant. It can't
oh,
be.
Yeah. This judge has to be investigated and taken off the bench as
Yes.
soon as possible. Oh, my goodness. I'm very glad you had the courage to speak out. And I'm very glad you came on to tell us your story. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Just that you're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you.
I really appreciate the invitation. And I'm still in a position where I need moral support. And so after meeting you and meeting some of the other people that you've worked with, it's been a great benefit to me and my family and my children. So please keep doing the great work that you're doing. And let's see if we can, you know, change some of this stuff.
Most definitely. If anyone wants to reach you, do you want them to come through me or do you want to give your email?
I'm happy to give my email. It's KEENO 1961 at gmail.com. And I'm happy to talk to anyone who's having this kind of trouble or who has advice for me or who has an idea of how to make things better. So be happy to hear from you.
Oh, excellent. Hey, don't jump off, okay?
Okay.
Slam the Gavel is a podcast to help the public understand what really goes on in these family courtrooms. I am your host, Marianne Petrie, author of Dismantling Family Court Corruption, Why Taking the Kids Was Not Enough, and Cry Out for Justice, Poems of Truth, and Raised by These Wolves, How Family and Federal Courts Are Failing Our Children. You can find me on Spotify, YouTube, Apple iTunes, Anchor FM, iHeartRadio, and other platforms I don't know about. Please feel free to buy me a coffee to help keep this podcast going, and that will be in the podcast notes. Thank you so much, Sean Keenan. Thank you for your advice.
Thank you.
Everything.
Okay, great. Talk to you later.